Welcome to Don't Pass Me By with me, your host, Bob Wilson. It's a fun show today, especially with the World Series just coming to a conclusion. We have on Mr. Kevin Baskin, who runs Vintage Baseball Photos on Facebook. It has a not too shabby 172,000.9 members. I wonder who the 0.9 member is. Well, that's a real impressive deal there. So, Kevin, welcome to the show today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
It's always fun. So for the most people, because you have so many members, they're going to know what the Vintage Baseball Photos page is about. Obviously, from the title, it's going to have vintage photos on there. But tell us how the page came to you, what made you start it, what came to your mind, and how did you set it up? Like, what are the rules for being on the page? How do the
Well,
photos
the
qualify?
Okay. Yeah. Well, the group has been in existence for almost 6 years now. We basically started out as just a small group of people that had an interest in old baseball, and we started thinking that a good way to share stories or to initiate stories and conversation about baseball was through pictures of baseball's past. And so it started small. We just took off, developed a following, and over the years it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And like I say, right now we are just almost at 173,000 members.
When you have so many members, how do you handle all the submissions with that many? If everybody even put up two a year, that's quite a number of photos. So on a daily basis, what is it like being the moderator of such a huge page?
We probably get around 100 submissions per day. Not everyone that submits their post qualifies for it to be on the group. Some things are off topic. Like right now, the World Series has just ended. During the current baseball season, people were willing to talk about current baseball events. Those don't really qualify for our page unless there's some way you can tie it into baseball before the year 2000, going back in history. So we get probably 100 submissions a day. It's a lot of work to just go through them each day, and we just want to make sure that we stay on topic and stay true to the group as we intended it to be at its start.
Well, I think you do a great job at it. And, moderating the page, some of it must be fun and some of it must be frustrating. So let's start with the fun. What are some of the better p posters? You don't have to name them, but like, what do they post? And, are there regulars who come on and they hit a niche? And what are the most popular posts? On the positive side, what are the best posts or the most regular posts that, people put? I know one fellow puts up everybody's birthday when a player had a birthday on that day. So tell us about the good side of the posts.
Yes, the gentleman that posts birthdays, I enjoy reading those because he doesn't use the big name players. He's going more for someone who might be a little more obscure, but everybody who has a history in baseball, that has a career in baseball, has a story. And so he brings in the story of their career and how they got where they were in the game. We have other people that were involved in the game in one form or fashion. We have some former players that will occasionally post. We have some people that are diehard fans of a particular team, and they dedicate most of their posts to things about the team of their particular interest. We also have people that worked in baseball that are sharing their experiences and things that they encountered while dealing with players and working with them in the clubhouse and things of that nature. So what we're trying to do is have a wide spectrum of the history of baseball. We're not favoring one player or one particular team. Obviously, the bigger name players in history, like your Mickey Mantles and Babe Ruths or Nolan Ryan, they get posted a lot because they were very popular players. But when we get, several posts on about a popular player, it never fails. Someone will make a comment. It's like, well, I didn't know this was a Babe Ruth page, or I didn't know this was a Mickey Mantle page. Well, it's not. It's about them, but it's also about the guy that was the third string catcher on the 1932 Chicago Cubs. It's about all of the history of baseball and anybody who had participated in it.
Well, I think that's one of the most fun parts of it is, you do get the great posts about, say, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, all those guys. And that's really a tremendous amount of fun. But sometimes when you see some of these guys who might not be remembered, especially some of the guys with great nicknames and such, it's a lot of fun going back and remembering them too. And then once in a while, as I go through the page, I'll notice like somebody's relative will come on and say, you know, the person you posted on was my, you know, great uncle or something. And that's kind of a lot of fun too. When those things happen, did any of those pop to your mind?
Oh, sure. That's something that is always a highlight for me when I see someone will comment either on a post that I have made or they submit a post themselves, and they make mention about that this is someone that they were related to. Like say, in addition to having some former players, we have a lot of family members. We have children and grandchildren of former players, people that were well known in the game. And so sometimes they will see that and they'll say, "Oh, I've never seen that picture of my dad before." And it may be a real common player, but you know, obviously players are photographed, you know, thousands of times if they have a long career in baseball. And so, you know, even their family members sometimes have not seen pictures that we have posted on the group, and they're thankful to be able to see this picture of their relative who played in the game. It's just always, like I say, it's always heartwarming when someone thanks us for sharing that picture. And it may not be a relative. It may be somebody that you know, somebody that was a former teammate of a famous player while they were playing in high school or Little League or whatever the case. You can't hardly come up with any former baseball player where there isn't some tie-in, that there's somebody. When you have a group of almost 173,000 diehard baseball fans, somebody is going to feel a connection to any player, even the most obscure player. There's going to be a connection to that player, and they will be thankful that they will see that player is being remembered.
Well, I think those are some of the most fun posts on the page. And of course, you know, the stars always shine brightly, but some of these guys who were really good players and, you know, made it to the major leagues and you know, they were part of teams and sometimes championship teams. I think it's really cool remembering them. Now, here's the other side of the coin, the part that's a little bit fun in and of itself. When knuckleheads come on the page, what is it like being a moderator? What are some of the things that challenge your skills, which are you're a gentleman and you're very good at keeping control on the page and being fair and keeping it going by the rules. But what are the things that challenge you the most that come on and people do things that maybe make you scratch your head sometimes?
Well, one thing that gets a little bit challenging is that so many times there'll be one thing that a particular player did in their career that, you know, wasn't their shining moment. Maybe they made a bad error in the field, or they struck out at a key time, or, you know, and their fans blame them for losing a game or whatever the case may be. And, you know, this could be a player who had a long 15, 20-year career. And people's memories a lot of times go back to one particular thing, or maybe an isolated issue, or maybe even some other character issues that they had off the field, and they want to center on that. And you know, we want to focus on the positive of the game. We don't want to sugarcoat and say that every player that ever played baseball was a choir boy, but you know, it gets challenging for people to just constantly make negative comments about a former player or things they did either in their career or on or off the field. People get very protective. If it was there, you know, one man's hero is another man's adversary. So, you know, people become really protective and argumentative over the careers of former baseball players or former teams and their rivalries and things of that nature. So it's all right to be a fan and to have these nice-spirited discussions, as I would like to describe them. But when you start getting into personal issues, we have to draw the line. We have sometimes where a member will go in and they're going way over the top, arguing with another member, maybe going, you know, trying to make it personal and making, you know, digs about that other member that, you know, we can't tolerate.
And you do a good job at moderating that. I know it's not easy with so many people, but you do a good job of it. One other thing that comes up from time to time, and I know like it must be a challenge, Not to dwell on the negative, but when people bring up the quote steroids era, how does that go? Like, I know that some people, realize it happened and let it go, and other people get extremely agitated by that. So when you get posts and such, how do you deal with the era in baseball we'll call the steroids era?
Well, how we typically, we've made the decision 4 or 5 years ago that if we just always focused on the very controversial negative issues, the group would not be able to survive. It wouldn't be able to grow because, most people are wanting to get on a Facebook group to feel good about whatever the subject is. And so, there's so many negative connotations about the steroid era of baseball, and people are so opinionated for or against their heroes that were accused of taking steroids, that the people that are the players that are the biggest suspects in the steroid era, we typically allow if the post is genuine and it's a good picture and the commentary is not out of bounds in their in the language they used, we'll allow a picture reposted, but we turn the comments off. Or we may monitor the comments very closely and then turn them off later, or slow the comments down if they start going in a real negative direction. I'm not as concerned about someone making a negative comment about a player or a negative comment about an issue as I am the resulting arguments that go into it. And like I say, we want this to be an environment where fans have a good-hearted discussion and not being at each other's throats with a stranger that you're just typing messages back and forth to on Facebook.
Well, that's what you like to see, good-hearted discussion, and there is like some of that. I just know it must be a challenge when that comes up on the page. I think you do a good job of it. Another one that pops to my mind, and I won't belabor these one after the other and pepper you with them, so to speak. But another one that comes to my mind in the general flow of the way my mind works is Pete Rose. So Pete Rose and gambling comes up, and I know that that's a dicey one sometimes. Especially now since they legalize gambling, it becomes a kind of a dicey question, kind of a tough one to hash out. What do you think of Pete and all that business, and should he be in the Hall of Fame, do you think?
Well, the issue with Pete Rose is basically in 1989, he accepted a lifetime ban from baseball. I mean, there was no discussion on whether he did or he didn't, what he did was worthy of a lifetime ban or not. He himself accepted a lifetime ban. Now, he was eligible to apply for reinstatement at a later time, which I'm sure he has, several times, and he's never been reinstated. So, but basically, the reason that he was banned from baseball was his own admission of issues in which that he agreed to that lifetime ban. And so, it's one of those things that the biggest issue that comes up all the time is whether or not Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm very happy to say that I was able to fulfill a lifetime dream of my own. I visited the Hall of Fame up in Cooperstown last month, and in
Wow.
touring the Hall of Fame, Pete Rose's memorabilia is all over the place in the Baseball Hall of Fame. They're not pretending like that Pete Rose the player did not exist, and they're not failing to recognize his accomplishments, which were great in the game of baseball. He's just not enshrined as a member of the Hall of Fame. And so if you're looking for Pete Rose items in the Hall of Fame, they're not hard to find. There's lots of stuff in there that is celebrating his career. He's just not enshrined as a member.
Would it have made it easier if Rose had done what he did as only being a manager? Because if memory serves me correctly, he was a player manager when he was betting on baseball. So I thought, that would have made it cut and dry. We could put him in as a player, and then, as a manager is when he kind of skunked himself. But because he was a player manager, it made that a little more cloudy of an issue and tougher on Pete. Do you think that's true?
Well, regardless of what he did or he didn't do, I think that a manager has to be more accountable than the players as far as their conduct and keeping the game above board. Now, I know you made reference earlier to the gambling. That's a big part of legalized gambling is now a big part of baseball. And gambling entities are now sponsors of baseball teams where they have their own networks and they're sponsoring and televising the games. And gambling is a big part of the sport. We still have to draw the line to keep the integrity to make sure that the players are playing legitimately to the best of their abilities, and the managers are managing to the best of their abilities to keep the game legitimate and above board. I think a manager has to be held even to a higher level of accountability than the players, because the manager has the ability to put somebody in the game or pull them out or pinch hit in a key situation. Obviously, there would be some things that would look kind of fishy, but if you had, a really hot hitter and he was playing really well on a particular night, and all of a sudden he's pulled out of the game, he's not injured, and he's pulled out of the game, and they put in a reserve who's, not as good a player, that would look very, that the manager might have his reasons. Maybe he's got a hunch, or maybe the pinch hitter hits better against left-handed pitchers on Tuesday nights on AstroTurf, but it would really be scrutinized on why that decision was made to pull a guy out, to put in what would on paper appear to be a lesser player. Managers have to be really held to a high level of accountability to make sure that the integrity of the game is maintained.
Excellent point. Good point. But do you think now at some point maybe he's been punished enough and it's going to be time to, he's still thriving and he's still healthy, so I don't think he's departing from us tomorrow. But while he's still alive, I'd like to see him, he was a great player and
he was a great player.
How would you vote? Do you think we should let him in during his lifetime and he's paid the price, or should he be continued to be not allowed as an electee?
Well, I think for better or worse, I think his issues are somewhat tied in with the Chicago Black Sox scandal of 1919, where they had one player, Shoeless Joe Jackson, which, he was one of the greatest players of his era. And based on his statistics alone, he would have been enshrined in the Hall of Fame, decades ago. But the year after the White Sox allegedly threw the World Series, 8 players were issued a lifetime ban of the game. And so now we're talking about over 100 years since that happened. And Joe Jackson still is not in the Hall of Fame. And he's been passed away now since, for decades now. I don't remember off the top of my head the year that he passed away, but I think it was in the 50s. But so we're talking about probably 70 years that he has been departed, and he has still not been elected to the Hall of Fame. And it was always kind of muddy how much of an involvement he actually had in that issue. So, I don't know that Rose will be elected in his lifetime. It's a different world now than it was in the 1920s or even in the 1950s when, at the end of Shoeless Joe Jackson's life. Maybe people will look at things differently now that gambling is entities are now sponsoring and partnering with Major League Baseball. Maybe there'll be a lightened stance on Rose. I saw where there was going to be a casino opening in Cincinnati sometime next year, and that Pete Rose was going to place the first legal bet there. The times are changing, and there may be, Pete's not getting any younger. I think he's 80 or better now. So if they're going to do anything in his lifetime, they're going to have to do so in the next few years.
Now, with the Hall of Fame, and you said you just visited there, that must have been a fascinating trip. It would have been nice to see a fly on the wall to see what you were thinking as you looked at all the different exhibits. Now, as time goes on, it seems like some of the players that they argue about, say like a Thurman Munson or a Gil Hodges, saying that these guys should be brought in. I think that a case can be made for either player. But some of the players coming in, they say are like, very good, but not Hall of Fame quality, and they're getting elected. Is there anything to that argument, or do you think they're making all good choices?
Well, Gil Hodges, actually went in this year by the Veterans Committee. And
all right, this is a bulletin to me, so thank you for getting me up to speed. Fair enough. I live near Brooklyn, so I'm glad Gil is in. So, but the
yeah,
rest of the fellows, the rest of the fellows, what do you think?
Yeah, Gil was put in this year. Thurman Munson and other players whose careers were shortened, it's always an interesting case. In Thurman Munson's case, you know, I believe he was 32 years old in the prime of his career when he was killed while piloting his own private plane. So, you know, he didn't have that back half of his career to add to his numbers. So he has to be judged on a shorter career than what he would have had otherwise. And unfortunately, I think because his body of work was not quite what the Hall of Fame has deemed was up to that level, he's not been put in. Time changes over the course of time. I've seen a lot of players that are put in, just like Gil Hodges was this year. Gil Hodges has not hit a home run or got a base hit in decades, but you know he was put in by the Veterans Committee this year. Thurman Munson might be sometime in the future. It's hard to say. It's funny though, as we're watching games on TV now, I'm very fortunate. My wife's also a baseball fan, and we'll be watching a game together, and somebody will come up to bat that's a big star in the game now, and she'll say, "Do you think he's a Hall of Famer?" Because we've just been to the Hall of Fame, and the Hall of Fame's on our mind, and so she'll say, "Is this player a Hall of Famer?" And my general answer is usually, it depends. You know, if his career ended today, maybe not, because he's on track to be a Hall of Famer. But if a guy is 30, 32 years old, and they're in their prime, and they've got this great body of work up to that point, what would happen if their career suddenly ended? And that's what, you know, the selection committee had to face with Thurman Munson. Let's say, you know, if something happened right now and a Bryce Harper or a Mike Trout or other big names that are right in their prime of their career have won, they've won MVPs, they're at the height of their game right now, but if suddenly their career ended tomorrow, would they make the Hall of Fame? And that's something that's going to be debated, you know, endlessly, as, you know, for the rest of time. Even if somebody is installed in the Hall of Fame, the naysayers will say they shouldn't have got in, and if they don't get in, the naysayers will say they should have been elected. So, you know, it's something that there's no real right or wrong answer. There's just a group of baseball writers that get to select the members of the Hall of Fame for the first 10 years. They have to be retired for 5 years, and then now they have a 10-year window to be elected by the writers, and then they get turned over to the Veterans Committee, which is a group of former players that are Hall of Famers and other people, a very small group of people that have a long, long history with baseball, that, you know, they put in some players through the Veterans Committee that were previously passed by the general writing group.
Now, in your opinion, what about the guys who were proven steroid users and it's time to vote them in or not vote them in? They're going to have to make a decision on this that's probably going to be very controversial at some point. What do you make of all that?
Well, none of them have got in. None of the ones like we talk about that are so controversial in the baseball group that I run, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Alex Rodriguez, none of those guys have been elected by the writers. In the case of some of those players, they have run out of chances to be elected to the Hall of Fame or their 10-year window is just about up in some cases. And then that's going to turn over to the Veterans Committee. The Veterans Committee will probably in the future, I have no reason to think this other than just a hunch, a gut feeling, is that the Veterans Committee, which will be at the time that they're going to be considered, it'll be some of those players' temporaries. They may have a little softer stance and put in a Barry Bonds or a Roger Clemens, who, if you just look at their statistics and the awards they won, you know, they're no doubter that they're Hall of Famers, but they have never been elected. And it doesn't look like that the ones that were really tied in with the steroids and had these phenomenal numbers, it doesn't look like the writers are going to put them in. And so it's going to be at the discretion of the Veterans Committee down the line. It's unfortunate because so many of those players that have suspicions of PED usage, they were great players before any of this came up, and you know, would have made the Hall of Fame. I have no doubt that Barry Bonds would have, whether he used PEDs or not. That's something for you know, he only knows exactly to what extent that he did or he didn't. But he was a great player without them. He didn't need them. So you know, that's the only thing that I would say about on some of those players, that it's a shame that their career was tarnished in that way, because they were, most of those guys were great players without needing any extra help.
Well, I think that with some of these guys, I think you could only enforce it if it was, you know, a proven case, even if it seemed, you know, when you look at it with common sense and you say that guy was probably using, that's really not strong enough to keep someone out. I think, you know, they would have to have been actually caught. But it makes it dicey, I think, with not just admission to the hall, but with like individual records, like most RBIs, most home runs. Like something like that really could have been affected, you know, and it kind of makes the records a little bit cloudy in my mind. Do you see it that way, or do you have a different take on it?
Well, you know, to date, you know, there's never been any actions taken other than, like I say, some of these guys, they've not been elected to the Hall of Fame. But you look up on any website or any record, baseball record book, and you're going to see that the leading home run hitter in the history of baseball is Barry Bonds. He also hit the most home runs in a single season. Those are facts. That's not opinions. He did that on the field. Major League Baseball has never taken action to delete or disqualify any of those records. Roger Clemens won 7 Cy Young Awards. He didn't have to give those back. They didn't make them null and void or give them to the runner-up in those years. So, you know, those achievements still stand as baseball records. You know, none of that has changed, which is kind of ironic. Like I say, when you tie that back into the Hall of Fame discussion, that you have the leading home run hitter in history, in Barry Bonds, you've got the leading base hit leader in history, Pete Rose, also not in the Hall of Fame for reasons we already discussed. But, you know, their records still stand. They did not take their records away from them. The Hall of Fame is really a separate issue that is voted on by people that covered the game. And again, there is no set standard. That there's not a rule that says, okay, if you hit 500 home runs, you're automatically installed in the Hall of Fame. Or if you won 300 games, or if you won 250 games, or you stole 1,000 bases, there are no set qualifications for Hall of Fame election. So it's just up to the people that have the votes, whether they want to put them in or not. But I don't see that the records are going to go away. The records that were established by Bonds and by Rose, those things that were done on the field, whether with the steroids, in the steroid users' cases, such as the home runs hit by Barry Bonds, those records aren't going away. They still stand, and I don't think that's going to change. The only thing that might change is if somebody one day breaks those records. It's going to be hard to do.
Well, you've answered these with great aplomb and insight. And I just have one more along those lines. We just had a World Series, and Houston won the World Series. The Astros came out on top in 6 games. We go back a few years. What did you make of the season where they had a little electronic help?
Well, you know, that was kind of interesting after the fact. I know even to this day, outside of Houston or the Texas area, I'm sure that Houston Astros are not, they don't have a huge national following, or they've sort of become the enemy team, of the bad guy team of baseball based on what happened a few years ago. You know, I kind of have a little different feeling about, when we're talking about PED usage, you're knowingly doing something to make your body bigger, run faster, jump higher, all those type things. Trying to get a competitive advantage, I'm not trying to applaud what the Astros did or excuse them, but, you know, the type of things they did as far as, you know, is stealing signs and banging trash cans or whatever the case to get a better idea of what pitch was coming, things of that nature. That's been going on as long as the sport has been going on. I mean, you know, you go back when all the fields were grass fields, and you know, if the visiting team had someone who was really good at bunting or was really really fast, you know, on bases or whatever, you know, they could bunt and then get on and steal. They might, and he bunted down the third baseline a lot. The home team might let the grass grow high, you know, higher than it should have been going down the third baseline to try to, you know, keep the bunt from going, you know, as far or what have you. The teams have always done that, and it's not just in baseball. But teams have always done that to try to get a competitive edge. I'm not applauding their efforts, but you know they got caught, and you know they've suffered some consequences. Maybe in a lot of fans' minds, they didn't suffer the consequences they should have. But you know it did give a little bit of a black eye on the year that they won that World Series. That being said, you flash forward to 2022, and I think the Astros have done their best to put that behind them. You know, they brought in Dusty Baker a couple years ago, who's got a great reputation as a lifer in the game of baseball. They brought him in to manage the team. Very few players off of that previous team played in this year's World Series. I think they've got two or three of their regular players now, maybe a pitcher or two. But, you know, they've turned the personnel over on that team pretty much since then, and this is pretty much a new team with a new achievement. And whether or not, you know, you're an Astros fan or not, I think, you know, they should be viewed as a legitimate champion now until somebody proved them otherwise.
Well, Dusty Baker, of course, played for the A's, so he's got, you know, some affinity for me to be a fan right there alone, and I'm glad that, you know, he got his title. But, you know, if you're talking about betting in baseball, just I'm going to belabor the point a little bit and put you on the spot. Suppose you were betting on a team and it wasn't just a player with his eyes trying to steal a sign, or say the Milwaukee Brewers or the Philly Fanatic having binoculars and then trying to flash a sign to somebody. But, I mean, this guy was, like, wired up like Mission Impossible, hanging onto his jersey as he, you know, scored at home plate so that they didn't pull it off and expose the wiring. Isn't that a little bit, like, over the top? Like, to me, it's kind of surreal.
Well, you know, that's a little bit over the top. We're using, you know, like I say, it's a little differently now, I guess, you know, with the technology that could be used now to – you know, to do something like that. I think in the old days, you know, they might have somebody that was out in the center field bleachers with some binoculars and a walkie talkie or something, you know, or maybe holding up a different color card or something, you know, if it was a fastball or a curve or something like that. Those type of things have always happened. Yeah, you could make the case that, you know, having someone wired up would be over the top. But again, you know, it's just sort of it's sort of the sign of the times that we live in a big high tech world now, and so you know, I guess if you're going to cheat, you could do it that way if you were so inclined. I don't like to see that in baseball. I really don't. But again, you know, it happens, and it's one of those things that you're only cheating if you got caught. You know, so it always brings up the question in my mind. Is that were other teams doing similar things? It's just one team got caught.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if anyone else did that, or if there's any way that, you know, they could check on it. But that one's really something. But now that gambling is part of the game, suppose somebody, guys whose nose goes to the right, you know, bet like $50,000 on a particular team, and the other team is wired. I just think that brings up some interesting possibilities. Like, you know, you can't really strip a team of the title, but it's amazing the technology's led it to this point. So I'll let it go at that. You answered fairly, but those are interesting points, I think. We had a great player who hit some numbers this year, and as far as we know, he didn't have any electronic help or any steroid help. I speak, of course, of Aaron Judge. What do you make of his accomplishments with a tough city to play in like New York and his free agency coming up? What do you make of Aaron Judge?
how well what Judge accomplished this year was something else. It was something that I was happy to be able to see it and follow along and watch his games as he was pursuing Roger Maris's record. It depends on the generation you grew up in. I'm sure if you grew up as a Maris fan of the 60s, you probably would like to have saw that record stand. But at the same token, you have to think in terms of the kids that are growing up today that have Aaron Judge as a hero and the thrill they were getting and seeing him pursue and break that record. He's a phenomenal talent. He's had some years in the past that he wasn't able to play a full season and, with some injuries. And this was a year that he just put it all together. He's an established veteran now. Like I say, his last year before free agency. It's funny. I've always seen, and this goes back as long as I followed baseball, and since they've had free agency going back to the 70s, it seems like a lot of times guys have their career years the year before they're going to be a free agent and free to sign with another team. I understand that. I think it'd be something that even you or I would do in our walks of life, or anybody would do in their career, that if they were up for another job or up for a promotion or had a chance to get a pay raise, that they would be putting forth their very best effort. Not that they weren't putting their best before, but they would go above and beyond to, make themselves better or project themselves in a position, to get a raise or a promotion. That's what happens sometimes in baseball. So Judge sure did it in a great time. He basically, using the gambling reference, he basically bet on himself, because he turned down a contract extension before the season started with the Yankees, and with the idea that he was confident that he could have this big year and would be worth even more either to the Yankees or on the open market. And if he had got hurt 3 weeks into the season, that contract would have been off the table. He wouldn't have got, and he might have been lucky to have gotten a smaller amount than what the Yankees had offered him, last winter. As it turned out, I'm sure he's in line to get a whole lot more, either with the Yankees or with somebody else.
If it's somebody else, where do you think he might be? What uniform might he be wearing on opening day?
Well, there's very few teams that could afford him, to be honest. I mean, unless he was wanting to take, if there was a particular team he wanted to play for and take a lesser amount of money. But, the amount of money that he's going to command is going to be higher than what the entire payroll is going to be for the Kansas City Royals, or maybe your Oakland A's, or, some of the Tampa Bay Rays, or, some of the other smaller market teams. They frankly can't afford him. San Francisco might be a good fit for him. I think he's, from the Bay Area, or from that part of the state anyway. That might be an option, or the Dodgers might be an option. Because I know, like I say, he's a California kid. If he wanted to get back to the West Coast, I'm not involved in his negotiations, and I have no hotline to Aaron Judge, but. When the dust settles, he's just one of those guys that you just think of as a Yankee and you feel like that he'll spend his career with them. And so I just think when the dust settles, he'll remain with the Yankees.
Well spoken, and good, clear thoughts as always. Now, as for other free agents for the beginning of next year, who do you think we might see moving around?
Well, there's a lot of really good names that are going to be out there in the market. Trey Turner, the shortstop of the Dodgers, he was with the Nationals until he was traded midseason to the Dodgers. Because the Nationals were trying to get something out of him because they realized they weren't going to re-sign him. He's a free agent. Jacob DeGrom, he's probably going to be, the top pitcher or one of the very top pitchers that's going on the open market this winter in free agency, the former Cy Young winner with the Mets. Carlos Correa, who was with the Astros, we talked about them in the previous championship year. He signed just a 1-year deal with the Minnesota Twins and has opted, for free agency to move on. It's funny that I guess the Astros knew what they were doing, because as it turned out, they basically let him go and leave because they had Jeremy Pena coming up. from the minors, who's just recently won the National League Championship MVP, and then last night he won the World Series MVP awards, and is, you know, a really good looking young player. So they had a ready-made replacement for Correa, but Correa is still a very attractive name that'll be out there on the free agency market, you know, over the next year. Xander Bogaerts, the shortstop of the Red Sox, he's right in his prime. Justin Verlander is kind of an interesting case. You know, he is a free agent, and even though he will be 40 years old by the time next season starts, you know, he came back from Tommy John surgery, and he's likely going to win the Cy Young Award this year. So I don't see a team, if he chooses to keep playing, I don't see a team giving him a 5 or 6 year contract. But for another year or two, you know, he would be a really good pitcher that would help anyone that would be that would be wanting to make a playoff run. Clayton Kershaw is another big name pitcher that's going to be on the free agent market. So there's several guys out there that are going to command pretty good paydays between now and the start of next season.
Well, if I can ask a little bit about the team I root for. A couple of years ago, you know, the A's had done pretty good. You know, they had some good players on there, lost so many of them who had to be traded because of salary or was signed away because of salary. With the players they got in return, do you think the A's have some light coming up on the horizon in a few years, or how do you see the state of their franchise?
Well, Bob, to be honest, you know, I don't follow the A's or the West teams, the West Coast teams as much as I do teams closer to my part of the country. I guess it's because they play so many of those night games on the West Coast. It's past my bedtime, you know. So, yes. You know, those are the late West Coast games. Those teams I don't follow or watch as much as I do teams that are in the Central and Eastern time zones, because their games are fit more with you know, my life schedule to watch them. But, you know, the A's are one of those cases, like I said earlier, the Kansas City Royals, some of the other teams like that, where they have to do well in getting good prospects, do well in the draft. They have to, if they do have a veteran that they know that they can't, re-sign in free agency, they've got to make smart trades to move him for the right, not just for prospects, not just for bodies, but for really good bodies. That it's been shown, the Royals did in 2015, they showed, they were in the World Series a couple times there with mostly young homegrown players that were not yet eligible for free agency. So the A's, you know, that's their best shot. They've done it in the past, and that's their best shot moving forward. And you have a better sense of their current roster than I do, I'm sure. But that's going to be their best path now or in the future, is developing those prospects and get a couple good years out of them. Hope they gel as a group, that they can make a run before they start peeling them off, you know, for free agency.
Because of finances, I think they did have to make those moves, but just really stung to have such an overhaul and lose, over 100 games this year. But hopefully maybe we could pull at least closer to 500 this year. That would be a start. But if some of these guys get older, here's hoping. But here's two names for you to pick your brain. Babe Ruth and Otani. What do you make of this Otani guy playing the field and pitching to such great aplomb? And how does he compare in your mind to Babe Ruth? That's a tough comparison for any player to stand next to the Babe. But how do you see those two guys?
Well, all you can do is compare people with their contemporaries. And what Babe Ruth did was amazing in his time. You know, he could have continued pitching for a few years, probably, longer than he did. It wasn't that he wasn't an effective pitcher. When he got to the Yankees, they just saw a way to make more money by having him out there in the field every day. And, of course, there wasn't a designated hitter, which Otani is. And so it's, you know, for Otani is a once-in-a-lifetime type of talent who can pitch and hit on a major league level. But, you know, Ruth probably would have continued pitching. This is just my opinion, but he probably would have continued pitching a little bit longer if 100 years ago there was a designated hitter in the American League and all he had to do, 3 days out of four was just go up there and swing the bat three or four times and then, go back to the dugout and then, prepare for his back then they had usually just had four-man rotation. So, every fourth day he would be starting pitcher and then the other days be a DH. Now that's not to diminish what Ohtani is accomplishing. When you look at his numbers, again, I don't watch him on a nightly basis because he's another one of those West Coast players. But I see his stats, I see the highlights, and it's just amazing the numbers that he's able to put. That he's basically you're getting two roster spots in one player, where you've got an all-star pitcher and then a power hitting home run hitter. Like he is, it's amazing. He was doing that in Japan before he came over to the United States to play in Major League Baseball, and I was a little skeptical that he would be able to pull that off and do it to the level of success that he has. And he had arm problems, and I believe he had Tommy John surgery, and he wasn't able to pitch there for a while, but he was able to continue to bat for 1 year, and they had to shut down his pitching. But for the last couple of years, he's done both the entire season, and he's a phenomenal talent. There's just no question about it.
Now, if we could put a little pressure on you, if we named you GM of the Angels for just the next 10 minutes, would you hang on to a guy like Ohtani with what he's going to cost to pay? He's going to get a hefty paycheck, what it'll cost to keep him. Of course, he's going to be on SportsCenter, and you're going to sell a ton of jerseys. But if somebody like the Yankees is offering, say, five players back for him who are young and don't have expensive contracts, which angle do you think they're going to play with him, and what would your advice be?
Well, the other issue that I make is what they would do with Mike Trout. Can they keep both? Can they afford both? I don't know. I don't have a look at their books. I don't know their fiscal situation. But, it would be hard for a lot of teams to have two players that are going to command probably in the top 10 salaries in the game and have both of them on your team and then be able to field a competitive team otherwise. It just depends on what the deal was. If I was the GM of the Angels, I don't believe they're going to be knocking on my door offering me that job. But if that was...
Well, we just did, hypothetically, right now. We hear it. Don't pass me by with Bob Wilson, your host. We just made you for the next 10 minutes. You are the GM, Kevin, so baby. But would you keep him or would you trade him for five players?
Well, forget Ohtani. What I want to know is how big is my contract?
We can discuss that after the show ends. We have numbers written down. I think they'll be to your satisfaction, sir.
Okay, because I may hold out for a better deal, but there may be another podcast that's going to make me the fantasy GM of the St. Louis Cardinals.
We would stretch our budget to keep you, sir.
I'll have to weigh all my options there.
I wouldn't blame you.
But with Ohtani, it just depends. If the deal was there, where there were other, I wouldn't trade him for five prospects that haven't been past AA, and they just look good on paper. But no, I wouldn't do that. But if there was a package with some frontline players, some pitchers, some everyday players that are high level players. That might be something that I have to entertain. And then, like I say, at the same time, they'd have to make the decision, are we going to invest our money for the future face of the franchise over the next 5-10 years being Ohtani or being Mike Trout? Trout has got back issues, and I hope that it doesn't affect his career or shorten his career. But, he's got health issues himself to deal with. And both of those guys are going to demand, their play will demand, the very high end salaries. So, I would, if I was GM of the Angels, I'd like to keep Ohtani. But if the right deal was there, everybody's always on the trade market if the right deal came up.
Well spoken and well thought out as usual. You mentioned Trout in there with his back problems. If you could afford one of the two, It sounds like your answer was leaning in a particular direction, but now that you are GM for like that, we still have 7 minutes left in your GM-ship. Would you, if you could only keep one of them, which one would you keep and why?
Probably I would lean towards keeping Ohtani at this point because he's younger and you do get a pitcher and you do get a batter out of him. And you'd have to really wonder how long Trout is going to be able to continue to play full seasons at the level that he has played over the last few years. I hope it's not the case, but I would think that if I was looking at it from the Angels management point of view, you might be looking at Trout being a year or two past his absolute prime, and that his health may continue to decline. If he's a guy that 2 years from now is only able to play 100 to 120 games a year, and you're talking about him getting a huge salary, Ohtani might be the better bet at this point because he can pitch, he can hit, and he is younger.
Now, as we're winding up a little bit, let me go back to this year's World Series. As you were watching this World Series, the Phillies made a valiant effort. It just seemed to me they couldn't hit to keep up with those guys from Houston. But as you saw the series, what did you make of it? What stood out to you? You have a good insight with these things. You followed the game for many years, and you're a smart guy. So, what did you make when you saw this World Series? What stood out to you?
Oh, I kept being amazed by the emergence. Watching the games at home with my wife, this Jeremy Pena, who was the MVP. I told my wife on multiple occasions. I said, "We're watching a star being born here in front of our eyes." That I think he really emerged. They have some good young talent on that team, and their pitching is just unbelievable. They probably have as deep a bullpen as I can recall in recent years in Major League Baseball. Ryan Stanek, who is a really good relief pitcher, who pitched collegiately for my Arkansas Razorbacks here, that I saw pitch a lot of times in college back in the day. He had been in the past more like a seventh to eighth inning setup man. He this year he was down to being, and it wasn't like that his career had suffered or anything. He's still, he's throwing 98, 99 miles an hour on his fastball, and coming in and doing a good job when called upon. But it looked like he was down to being about their fifth or sixth option coming out of the bullpen. Not that he had slumped. They had pitchers that were just getting better and better. It was sort of an embarrassment of riches, what the Astros had coming out of the bullpen. And I think in a long series like that, and especially now when you're not expecting pitchers to pitch but 5 or 6 innings, having that much strength in your bullpen, it's just a huge plus. And if anything, that might have been a little bit of the advantage that swayed things over the Astros' way. And like you say, the timely hitting was as well. The one thing about the only complaint, and this is just the old school baseball fan in me, but the only complaint that I have about how the World Series was played was the game in which Christian Javier had a no-hitter going through 6 innings, and he was removed from the game. Now, I know that's with modern analytics, they made the right play. They ended up bringing in three more relievers, and they finished the combined no-hitter. But I would have liked to have seen that chase for Javier that night to have a chance at Major League history. Don Larsen for the Yankees back in the 50s pitched a perfect game. That was the only no-hitter or perfect game ever thrown in the World Series up until this year. And that was quite an accomplishment, what they did the other night with four pitchers combining for a no-hitter. But I wish that, just from a selfish standpoint as a fan, I wish they'd let Javier stay in there until he gave up his first hit.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. That's a real delineation between old school and new school, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
Now, close to your heart, we know you love those Cardinals. What do you see for them in the near future?
Well, it was sort of a sad note when the Cardinals season ended. You know, they had a good season this year, but it was a sad note because it meant the end of the career of Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina. So, you know, they, of course, Pujols had been gone to the Angels, and he played a little bit with the Dodgers last year. But he came back for his swan song and ended up making it quite a swan song. He ended up getting over 700 home runs this year, which didn't seem very plausible early in the year. And then he was a very hot hitter going down the stretch. And got over 700 home runs for his career. And Molina had been the catcher and the face of the franchise for years after Pujols had left. And, you know, it's sad to see them go. But, you know, players don't hang on forever. They were able to go out. I was happy to see that even though they lost in the playoffs, that both of those players got base hits the last time that they ever stepped in a batter's box. They both went down swinging, and they both got base hits their last time at bat, which I thought that was pretty cool. But it's going to be kind of sad not seeing them with the team next year. I was really pleased to see that Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado is going to be with the team now for the foreseeable future. They're under club contract control for the next couple of years, so they're not going anywhere. And that's having solid players at first and third base. They're going to be really, really good there and solid, and those are key positions. Adam Wainwright is coming back for another year. He decided, you know, not to retire and come back another year. The Cardinals are going to have a good, solid franchise. They've got such a great fan following, and you know, you can go to a Cardinals game in the middle of the week, and it's like going to a college football tailgate party in St. Louis. You know, they have tremendous fan support.
As well they should. So now, thank you for being here today. Could you tell everybody again, there's 172,000.9 other members, but if they want to find the page, Vintage Baseball Photos, how can they find you and how can they join up? I guess if they're familiar with Facebook, they can figure that out quickly, but where can the people find you?
Yeah, you got to be a member of Facebook, or you have to have a Facebook account, obviously. But then when you get in there, if you just type in the search bar and Vintage Baseball Photos, it will pop up. It is a private group, but we are certainly accepting members that are legitimate baseball fans. But you can search for it. It'll show, depending if you're on a device, on a mobile device, it may say 172.9. 1,000 members, so we're just a few shy of 173,000. If somebody looks at it tomorrow, then we may have 173,000. We're getting really close, but it's easy to find. You can apply for membership if a member of the group invites you to go into become a member of the group, and you've had a Facebook account for a year, and you have a friend in the group, and you apply, you're automatically approved. Otherwise, you go into a queue, and we have to look in there to see whether or not we will admit you. If you look like you would be a legitimate baseball fan, we try to admit everybody that applies. That's obviously, you know, they're not a scammer or a spammer. And we do get some of those that we have to call out. But we like to get new members, and we like to have them.
Well, you've certainly gotten a ton of them. So we thank you for being here. This is Bob Wilson for Don't Pass Me By. We want to say I'll come back next week. Pretty soon in the near future, we might have another baseball show with Kevin coming back, hopefully, if he says yes. And we might have Mike Rudy with his dad, Joe Rudy, from the championship Oakland A's teams. Until then, we'll see you again.